Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. This week we're celebrating Hanukkah, so I thought I'd read you a Hanukkah story. This one is called Hanukkah in the Poorhouse. It was originally published in 1984 in the book Stories for Children by Isaac Besheva Singer, and reprinted in the collection Celebrating the Jewish Holidays, which was edited by Stephen J. Rubin and published in 2003 by the Brandeis University Press.
Outside there was snow and frost, but in the poorhouse it was warm. Those who were mortally ill or paralyzed lay in beds. The others were sitting around a large Hanukkah lamp with 8 burning wicks. Good-hearted citizens had sent pancakes sprinkled with sugar and cinnamon to the inmates. They conversed about olden times, unusual frosts, packs of wolves invading the villages during the icy nights, as well as encounters with demons, imps, and sprites. Among the paupers sat an old man, a stranger, who had arrived only 2 days before. He was tall, straight, and had a milk-white beard. He didn't look older than 70, but when the warden of the poorhouse asked him his age, he pondered a while, counted on his fingers, and said, "On Passover I will be 92. "No evil eye should befall you," the others called out in unison. "When you live you get older, not younger," the old man said. One could hear from his pronunciation that he was not from Poland, but from Russia. For an hour or so, he listened to the stories which the other people told, while looking intensely at the Hanukkah lights. The conversation turned to the harsh decrees against the Jews, and the old man said, "What do you people in Poland know about harsh decrees? In comparison to Russia, Poland is paradise." "Are you from Russia?" someone asked him. "Yes, from Vitebsk." "What are you doing here?" another one asked. "When you wander, you come to all kinds of places," the old man replied. "You seem to speak in riddles," an old woman said. "My life was one great riddle," he answered. The warden of the poorhouse, who stood nearby, said, "I can see that this man has a story to tell." "If you have the patience to listen," the old man said. "Here we must have patience," the warden replied. "It is a story about Hanukkah," said the old man. "Come closer, because I like to talk, not shout." They all moved their stools closer, and the old man began. "First, let me tell you my name. It is Jacob, but my parents called me Yankala. The Russians turned Yankala into Yasha. I mention the Russians because I am one of those who are called the captured ones. When I was a child, Tsar Nicholas I, an enemy of the Jews, decreed that Jewish boys should be captured and brought up to be soldiers. The decree was aimed at Russian Jews, not at Polish ones. It created turmoil. The child catchers would barge into a house or into a cheder where the boys studied, catch a boy as if he were some animal, and send him away deep into Russia, sometimes as far as Siberia. He was not drafted immediately. First, he was taken to a peasant in a village where he would grow up, and then, when he was of age, he was taken into the army. He had to learn Russian and forget his Jewishness. Often he was forced to convert to the Greek Orthodox faith. The peasant made him work on the Sabbath and eat pork. Many boys died from the bad treatment and from yearning for their parents. Since the law stipulated that no one who was married could be drafted for military service, the Jews often married little boys to little girls to save the youngsters from being captured. The married little boy continued to go to cheder. The little girl put on a matron's bonnet, but she remained a child. It often happened that the young wife went out in the street to play with pebbles or to make mud cakes. Sometimes she would take off her bonnet and put her toys in it. What happened to me was of a different nature. The young girl whom I was about to marry was the daughter of a neighbor. Her name was Razel. When we were children of 4 or 5, we played together. I was supposed to be her husband and she my wife. I made believe that I went to the synagogue and she prepared supper for me, a shard with sand or mud. I loved Razel, and we promised ourselves that when we grew up we would really become husband and wife. She was fair, with red hair and blue eyes. Some years later, when my parents brought me the good tidings that Razel was to marry me, I became mad with joy. We would have married immediately. However, Razel's mother insisted on preparing a trousseau for the 8-year-old bride, even though she would grow out of it in no time. 3 days before our wedding, 2 Cossacks broke into our house in the middle of the night, tore me from my bed, and forced me to follow them. My mother fainted. My father tried to save me, but they slapped him so hard that he lost 2 teeth. It was on the second night of Hanukkah. The next day, the captured boys were led into the synagogue to take an oath that they would serve the Tsar faithfully. Half the townspeople gathered before the synagogue. Men and women were crying, and in the crowd I saw Razel. In all misery, I managed to call out, "Razel, I will come back to you." And she called back, "Yankala, I will wait for you." If I wanted to tell you what I went through, I could write a book of 1,000 pages. They drove me somewhere deep into Russia. The trip lasted many weeks. They took me to a hamlet and put me in the custody of a peasant by the name of Ivan. Ivan had a wife and 6 children, and the whole family tried to make a Russian out of me. They all slept in 1 large bed. In the winter, they kept their pigs in their hut. The place was swarming with roaches. I knew only a few Russian words. My fringed garment was taken away and my side locks were cut off. I had no choice but to eat unkosher food. In the first days I spat out the pig meat, but how long can a boy fast? For hundreds of miles around there was not a single Jew. They could force my body to do all kinds of things, but they could not make my soul forsake the faith of my fathers. I remembered a few prayers and benedictions by heart and kept on repeating them. I often spoke to myself when nobody was around, so as not to forget the Yiddish language. In the summer, Ivan sent me to pasture his goats. In later years, I took care of his cows and horse. I would sit in the grass and talk to my parents, to my sister Leah, to my brother Chaim, both younger than I, and also to Razel. Although I was far away from them, I imagined that they heard me and answered me. Since I was captured on Hanukkah, I decided to celebrate this feast, even if it cost me my life. I had no Jewish calendar, but I recalled that Hanukkah comes about the time of Christmas, a little earlier or later. I would wake up and go outside in the middle of the night. Not far from the granary grew an old oak. Lightning had burned a large hole in its trunk. I crept inside, lit some kindling wood, and made the benediction. If the peasant had caught me, he would have beaten me, but he slept like a bear. Years passed, and I became a soldier. There was no old oak tree near the barracks, and you would be whipped for leaving the bunk bed and going outside without permission. But on some winter nights, they sent me to guard an ammunition warehouse, and I always found an opportunity to light a candle and recite a prayer. Once a Jewish soldier came to our barracks and brought with him a small prayer book. My joy at seeing the old familiar Hebrew letters cannot be described. I hid somewhere and recited all the prayers, those of the weekdays, the Sabbath, and the holidays. That soldier had already served out his term, and before he went home, he left me the prayer book as a gift. It was the greatest treasure of my life. I still carry it in my sack. 22 years had passed since I was captured. The soldiers were supposed to have the right to send letters to their parents once a month, but since I wrote mine in Yiddish, they were never delivered, and I never received anything from them. One winter night, when it was my turn to stand watch at the warehouse, I lit 2 candles, and since there was no wind, I stuck them into the snow. According to my calculation, it was Hanukkah. A soldier who stands watch is not allowed to sit down, and certainly not to fall asleep. But it was the middle of the night, and nobody was there, so I squatted on the threshold of the warehouse to observe the 2 little flames burning brightly. I was tired after a difficult day of service, and my eyelids closed. Soon I fell asleep. I was committing 3 sins against the Tsar at once. Suddenly I felt someone shaking my shoulder. I opened my eyes and saw my enemy, a vicious corporal by the name of Kapustin, tall, with broad shoulders, curled mustache, and a thick red nose with purple veins from drinking. Usually he slept the whole night, but on that night some demon made him come outside. When I saw that rascal by the light of the still-burning Hanukkah candles, I knew that this was my end. I would be court-martialed and sent to Siberia. I jumped up, grabbed my gun, and hit him over the head. He fell down, and I started running. I ran until sunrise. I didn't know where my feet were carrying me. I had entered a thick forest, and it seemed to have no end. For 3 days I ate nothing and drank only melted snow. Then I came to a hamlet. In all these years I had saved some 15 rubles from the few kopecks that a soldier receives as pay. I carried it in a little pouch on my chest. I bought myself a cotton-lined jacket, a pair of pants, and a cap. My soldier's uniform and the gun I threw into a stream. After weeks of wandering on foot, I came to railroad tracks. A freight train carrying logs and moving slowly was heading south. It had almost 100 cars. I jumped on one of them. When the train approached a station, I jumped off in order not to be seen by the station master. I could tell from signs along the way that we were heading towards St. Petersburg, the capital of Russia. At some stations, the train stood for many hours, and I went into the town or village and begged for a slice of bread. The Russians had robbed me of my best years, and I had the right to take some food from them. And so I arrived in St. Petersburg. There I found rich Jews. And when I told them of my predicament, they let me rest a few weeks and provided me with warm clothes and the fare to return to my hometown, Vitebsk. I had grown a beard and no one would have recognized me. Still, to come home to my family using my real name was dangerous because I would be arrested as a deserter. The train arrived in Vitebsk at dawn. The winter was about to end. The smell of spring was in the air. A few stations before Vitebsk, Jewish passengers entered my car, and from their talk I learned that it was Purim. I remembered that on this holiday it was the custom for poor young men to put on masks and to disguise themselves as the silly king Ahasuerus, the righteous Mordecai, the cruel Haman, or his vicious wife Zeresh. Toward evening, they went from house to house, singing songs and performing scenes from the Book of Esther, and the people gave them a few groschen. I remained at the railroad station until late in the morning, And then I went into town and bought myself a mask of Haman with a high red triangular hat made of paper, as well as a paper sword. I was afraid that I might be recognized by some townspeople after all, and I did not want to shock my old parents with my sudden appearance. Since I was tired, I went to the poorhouse. The poorhouse warden asked me where I came from, and I gave him the name of some faraway city. The poor and the sick had gotten chicken soup and challah from wealthy citizens. I ate a delicious meal, even a slice of cake, washed down by a glass of tea. After sunset, I put on the mask of the wicked Haman, hung my paper sword at my side, and walked toward our old house. I opened the door and saw my parents. My father's beard had turned white over the years. My mother's face was shrunken and wrinkled. My brother Chaim and my sister Leah were not there. They must have gotten married and moved away. From my boyhood, I remembered a song which the disguised Haman used to sing, and I began to chant the words, "I am wicked Haman, the hero great, and Zeresh is my spiteful mate. On the king's horse ride I will, and all the Jews shall I kill." I tried to continue, but a lump stuck in my throat, and I could not utter another word. I heard my mother say, "Here is Haman. Why didn't you bring Zeresh, the shrew, with you?" I made an effort to sing with a hoarse voice, and my father remarked, "A great voice he has not, but he will get his 2 groschen anyhow." "Do you know what, Haman?" my mother said. "Take off your mask, sit down at the table, and eat the Purim dinner with us." I glanced at the table. 2 thick candles were lit in silver candlesticks as in my young days. Everything looked familiar to me, the embroidered tablecloth, the carafe of wine. I had forgotten in cold Russia that oranges existed. But on the table there were some oranges, as well as mandelbread, a tray of sweet and sour fish, a double-braided challah, and a dish of poppy cakes. After some hesitation, I took off my mask and sat down at the table. My mother looked at me and said, "You must be from another town. Where do you come from?" I named a faraway city. "What are you doing here in Vitebsk?" my father asked. "Oh, I wander all over the world," I answered. "You still look like a young man. What is the purpose of becoming a wanderer at your age?" my father asked me. "Don't ask him so many questions," my mother said. "Let him eat in peace. Go wash your hands." I washed my hands with water from the copper pitcher of olden days, and my mother handed me a towel and a knife to cut the challah. The handle was made of mother of pearl and embossed with the words, "Holy Sabbath." Then she brought me a plate of kreplach filled with mincemeat. I asked my parents if they had children, and my mother began to talk about my brother Chaim and my sister Leah. Both lived in other towns with their families. My parents didn't mention my name, but I could see my mother's upper lip trembling. Then she burst out crying, and my father reproached her. "You're crying again? Today is a holiday." "I won't cry anymore," my mother apologized. My father handed her his handkerchief and said to me, "We had another son, and he got lost like a stone in water." In Cheder, I had studied the book of Genesis and the story of Joseph and his brothers. I wanted to cry out to my parents, "I am your son." But I was afraid that the surprise would cause my frail mother to faint. My father also looked exhausted. Gradually, he began to tell me what happened on that Hanukkah night when the Cossacks captured his son Yankala. I asked, "What happened to his bride-to-be?" And my father said, "For years she refused to marry, hoping that our Yankala would return. Finally, her parents persuaded her to get engaged again. She was about to be married when she caught typhoid fever and died." "She died from yearning for our Yankala," my mother interjected. "The day the murderous Cossacks captured him, she began to pine away. She died with Yankala's name on her lips." My mother again burst out crying, and my father said, "Enough. According to the law, we should praise God for our misfortunes as well as for our good fortunes." That night, I gradually revealed to my parents who I was. First, I told my father, and then he prepared my mother for the good news. After all the sobbing and kissing and embraces were over, we began to speak about my future. I could not stay at home under my real name. The police would have found out about me and arrested me. We decided that I could stay and live in the house only as a relative from some distant place. My parents were to introduce me as a nephew, a widower without children, who came to live in their house after the loss of his wife. In a sense, it was true. I had always thought of Razel as my wife. I knew even then that I could never marry another woman. I assumed the name of Leibola instead of Yankala. And so it was. When the matchmakers heard that I was without a wife, they became busy with marriage propositions. However, I told them all that I loved my wife too much to exchange her for another woman. My parents were old and weak, and they needed my care. For almost 6 years, I remained at home. After 4 years, my father died. My mother lived another 2 years, and then she also died and was buried beside him. A few times, my brother and sister came to visit. Of course, they learned who I really was, but they kept it a secret. These were the happiest years of my adult life. Every night when I went to sleep in a bed at home instead of a bunk bed in the barracks, and every day when I went to pray in the synagogue, I thanked God for being rescued from the hands of the tyrants. After my parents' deaths, I had no reason to remain in Vitebsk. I was thinking of learning a trade and settling down somewhere, but it made no sense to stay in one place all by myself. I began to wander from town to town. Wherever I went, I stopped at the poorhouse and helped the poor and the sick. All my possessions are in this sack. As I told you, I still carry the prayer book that the soldier gave me some 60-odd years ago, as well as my parents' Hanukkah lamp. Sometimes when I'm on the road and feel especially downhearted, I hide in a forest and light Hanukkah candles, even though it's not Hanukkah. At night, the moment I close my eyes, Razel is with me. She is young, and she wears the white silk bridal gown her parents had prepared for her trousseau. She pours oil into a magnificent Hanukkah lamp, and I light the candles with a long torch. Sometimes the whole sky turns into an otherworldly Hanukkah lamp, with the stars as its lights. I told my dreams to a rabbi, and he said, "Love comes from the soul, and souls radiate light." I know that when my time comes, Razel's soul will wait for me in heaven. Well, it's time to go to sleep. Good night. A happy Hanukkah.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this story, and all of us here at Radio Sefarad wish all of you a very happy Hanukkah. And, as always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. I'll leave you now with Hanerot Halalu, these candles, from the CD Hag Sameach Yeladim. See you next week.
הנרות הללו אנו מדליקים, הנרות הללו אנו מדליקים. מדליקים על הניסים ועל הנפלאות ועל התשועות ועל המלחמות שעשית לאבותינו שעשית לאבותינו בימים ההם בימים ההם בימים ההם בזמן הזה הנרות 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 הללו אנו מדליקים